Special guest in the studio today for this special one-off special show, of course, stop saying special, is Brian Griffin, local lad from the Lye, who now is a world-famous photographer. And the reason I've got you in, Brian, just say hello to everyone if you like.
Hello, everyone.
And Billy's here as well, Billy Spakeman.
Hello, everybody. And, thanks for inviting me. This is an education today for me.
Yeah, and I wanted you here in case nothing worked, because I knew you'd be able to fix it. My mum's also here in the back of the room, and listeners to the show will know my mum. She's phoned in a few times by accident, and we've stuck her on the air. But she doesn't want to say anything today. She just wants to be an observer, so that's fine. But anyway, Brian Griffin, international photographer, started in the Lye. You now have studios in London, and I mentioned about Brian Eno. You've worked with you've done photography, documentary photography, fashion photography, but one of the things you're best known for with people I speak to on the street is obviously around here, the Round Oak Steelworks picture, which we'll talk about in a bit. But also working with, you know, Depeche Mode, Echo and the Bunnymen, Kate Bush, we've got some of that on the show later. And what we're trying to show people is, and I'll let you speak in a minute, but what we're trying to show people is you can come from around here and you can achieve amazing things. And we just want all the kids and all the older people as well to know that you can achieve amazing things. So, Brian, welcome.
It's very good to be here.
It's good to have you, and it's very kind of you to come up as well. We went to your old haunts before we came here, didn't we?
We did.
We've been to Lye Cemetery.
Yeah.
To see some...
It's hardly a haunt, it's something that's haunting.
To see some of your relatives.
Yeah.
And we went to Stocking Street.
Yeah, that's where I lived as a boy in the Black Country. It's just off Ball's Lane in Lye, just off the cross there. Yeah, it's in Lye.
Yeah, everyone will know where that is, I'm sure, Stocking Street. It's one of those streets that people will know. But it was amazing going there with you and having you recreate an image in my head of what it used to be like down there, telling where all the buildings were and things. Yeah. As a lad growing up in the Lye, is that where your... I mean, you said to me earlier, your photography is influenced by being a Black Country boy.
Yeah.
So if you could tell us a little bit about being a Black Country boy and how that has influenced your work, and also... where the beginnings of your work, when you got your first camera, or the history of that. If you could just tell us a little bit about that, please.
Sure. Well, being a Black Country boy gives you a weird view of the world. Well, I found an upside-down view of the world, which I capitalised on. I was an only child, so therefore I had to make do with entertaining myself. If it was raining outside as a young boy or whatever, you know, I was just on my own, really, unless I went out to play with my mates and stuff. And so therefore, my imagination was obviously, I don't know, special. I don't know if it was special, but I worked at a company called Rapid Conveyors. Rapid Conveyors were just up from the Hayes in Lye, which is the main road in that crosses the A's. Ball's Lane crosses the A's, and it's the main road to Birmingham, really, through Lye and up into Alzerne. And I worked just over that cross. I think my dad said it's always best to work near your home. Actually, he always tried his hardest to get near his home, and he eventually ended up in a factory near the home. My dad was a horizontal borer. I grew up in a two-up, two-down house in Stocking Street, which I found really embarrassing. You know, when you have to say your address at school, I used to go, oh, Stocking Street.
You were the boy, Stocking Street.
Oh, and therefore everyone would burst out laughing, you know. And then it was a real weird thing happened. When I had to give my name... I said, my name, I was like really, really, really scared to give me my name is Brian James. And they all burst out laughing at James, which now is a fine name, Griffin, and they didn't laugh at that. So, but my memory is incredibly, my visual memory is very strong from the memories of my childhood, I think. Left a lot of... inspirations. And I ended up in Rapid Conveyors, as I was saying earlier. It was a company that made ready-mix concrete plants, you know, that mixes all the concrete and pours into the top of those trucks that go out with it, you know, you've seen them on the street and the roads. And I was down there because I was an apprentice. You know, I was just working in a little factory called Rapid. It was Rapid Conveyors. It's derelict now, of course. And I was holding a piece of wood as the foreman of the factory was hammering it with a sledgehammer down on this piece of wood. And I was holding it with my hands. People say, "You must be crazy. You just smashed your hands if you missed it." And he was putting a bearing down onto a shaft. So it revolved that shaft at the end of a conveyor. And he said, "Have you ever been interested in photography?" I said, "No, not really, no." And he said, "I think you should be, for some reason." He thought, I don't know why it made him think that. And of course I joined the local camera club. But I didn't want to be a photographer. I wasn't really that interested in it. I took some photographs when I lived in Lye. And I just assembled a portfolio and in a Boots album, and my girlfriend fell out with me. So there I was in Lye, down a back street. Girlfriend had left me. I was devastated. I looked at my whole life and I thought, I've just got to get out of it. I've got to go and see if I can make my way at something. So I thought, well, what shall I try? I'll try photography. And I applied to college in Manchester, and I got in. And then the first day of my course, we were all in the studio. We had to photograph an egg, you know, like a boiled egg, whatever, a normal egg, a chicken's egg. And I photographed this chicken's egg, and the whole class was amazed at my photograph of this chicken's egg. They all gathered round it and thought, "That's amazing." I didn't think it was amazing, but I don't know, somehow it obviously resonated with me.
Yeah.
And resonated
with
me.
You're in the perfect building for that.
Exactly. And then I built it up. I went to college, you know, for 3 years in Manchester. I was 21 when I went to college. I was 24 when I left. Yeah. But from someone who didn't like photography, that just thought, give it a chance, you know. I've become what I am, you know, whatever I might be. And I don't know, you've just got to be brave, I think. You just really need to be brave. And
just
don't
to make
just
that decision. And
make
just
that
go
decision.
With it.
Just be brave. Mm. Don't just stay there, you know, because it's easy. Don't take the easy way out. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And I've always kept, so I'll just finish off with this last little bit. I've always been adventurous, always. And now I survive from the fact, in my photography that is, that I am adventurous, that I just, I don't want to swear or anything like that, but I just go for it.
Mm.
And I don't fall into the trap of just doing the norm, you know.
Yeah.
I try that go that extra mile to get something special.
Can I ask, do you think those early years shape you into what you are now? Does it always influence you, the way you work and the ethic that you work with?
I never forget the Black Country, and I never forget what it actually embedded in me or instilled in me, or in my life back then, and all the working people, my father, my uncles, my aunts. We lived down in Stocking Street's a little nondescript street, two up, two down houses. You know, the snow coming in between the cracks in the windows, whatever you might talk about it. Bath off the wall, sit down in the bath. I got in the bath first.
You said it was a communal courtyard at the back of the toilet.
Four houses. The next four houses were.
That was right. Yeah.
Where was the toilet down the back, out the back? You know, where they all use the same outside toilet. We fortunately had a brew house, which the toilet was indoors. But I could always hear the people next door because they didn't even get their toilet mended. Right. And all through my childhood, they flushed it down with a bowl of water. So, like, all the aspects of the Black Country, everything about it built up into my memory, in my visual memory, and I retain most of those. I mean, my two books I've talked to you about is The Black Kingdom, which is volume one of my life as a photographer, and volume two, which is The Black Country Dada, which is the second volume of my life. It was an extraordinary life back then. It just everything. I mean, we had no internet. You had nothing.
Yeah.
Mm. We didn't even have a phone in our house. Actually,
so this is the problem now. People don't see the world around them because they're always staring at their phones and screens. So in a bit, we're going to talk about your connection to Briley Hall with the Round Oak Steel, which is the famous picture on the Depeche Mode album. We wanted to talk a bit about the amazing Kate Bush and about some of the celebrities that you've met. But just let's go back briefly. You've got a story about one of the Depeche Mode albums, which is one of your most famous iconic images. So you tell us that and lead into Kate Bush, if you like.
Yeah, well, the number two album for Depeche Mode was A Broken Frame, which I photographed like a peasant in a cornfield with a scythe, you know. It became incredibly famous, but immediately I'd done it, Kate saw it. Kate saw that cover, and she wanted me to repeat it. I had to find a cornfield somewhere. Fortunately, there's a cornfield about half a mile from my home near High Wycombe at that time. I drove down to my studio, which is in London and in Rotherhithe Street. And Kate was waiting for me. She was sitting in the gutter, actually, just alone at about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, and was waiting for me to come. It's all in my book, by the way, yeah. All in Black Country Dada, my book. And yes, we drove all the way back to near where my home was. I'd just come down to the studio, go all the way back, and I'll come back down again to get my car, whatever. We did the photography. But what I found was interesting about her was that she was so talented, more than just a voice. She was so inventive as well, so incredibly inventive. She was obviously a very special woman.
Yeah, the lyrics in her songs just take you away. You don't even need the music, just the words themselves.
And she, if you probably go on all the social media, she's taken my photograph again, because someone somewhere in the world, I don't know exactly where, has put the Ukrainian flag instead of the scythe, like photoshopped in, and hoped I didn't mind it. I don't mind it at all. It's fantastic, and Kate has seen it.
Yeah, I saw that on your Instagram page, which is Brian underscore Griffin.
Brian underscore Griffin underscore photographer.
Yeah.
And it's on Facebook as well. And she's come in, you know, to be my well, she's obviously a friend because she came in. And honestly, it's gone viral, really, with her influence and everything. And I'm so proud that she's helped it. It's a bit... because it's an awful thing that's happening in the world.
So hopefully that image will now help raise money for refugees and
exactly.
You know, feed people.
It's incredible.
Which is a beautiful thing to happen, for a piece of artwork to then go on to give something like
it's
that.
It's just incredible. I mean, I have to admit that my posters sell so well that it does form a reasonable income for me, because essentially that photograph is so famous in the world now.
And I don't want to blow too much smoke up your trumpet, because I know you're not that kind of guy, you're very down to earth. But when I was looking for images of you, one of the images that I found was that photograph on the front of Time magazine with the headline, "The World's Greatest Photographer."
Yeah.
So, you know, that says it all, really. You know, it is a fantastic image.
And you get all this from being a black country boy.
Yeah, this it gives us a proper grounding, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And we were saying about when you're young, it's like your imagination is open. That's when you absorb the real world that is Frank, that is Brian. And then you take that into your adult life, where the imagination gets a bit more closed down. And if you can hang on to that imagination and create art, you know, if anyone wants to create art on the high street in Briley Hill, get in touch with me, culture@brileyhill.net. Just speak to Frank, really. Talk to Frank, just like the government wanted you to do all those years ago. Talk to Frank, and we'll try and make any local people in Briley Hill who are interested in art and culture, we'll try and make that happen for you on the high street. Now, we're going into Hollow Man by R.E.M. Don't take this personally. It's just that you worked with R.E.M.
Yeah.
But like, I guess it is like a Hollow Man thing, because the camera is just... It's an empty box, isn't it, with a lens on the front, really, and you're filling that up with images. But we'll talk about... Some Great Reward is the album, Depeche Mode, and a lot of people locally, I see it on Facebook and on the internet all the time, talking about that album cover, which people will know is a sort of a blue big warehouse factory build. Was it where the steel used to go through on the train? Is that the big building there in the middle?
It's the big one, you know, the big one, that's all I know about.
So it's off Level Street. It was off Level Street before they demolished it. So behind where Sound Junkies is now, we've got recording studios there. That's where it was. But what I want to ask you about that, obviously you didn't take that when you lived here. Was that an archive picture of yours? Did you go back to that? Did you come to Briley Hill that day and take that shot? Was it a collage? How did it work?
Well, we were talking earlier about the effects of the Black Country upon my life and upon my imagination, which in eventually is incorporated into my photography. And I lived in a place called Lye, which I've mentioned, Stocking Street, and I looked out my bedroom window, which is just a two-story house, and I could see Round Oak on the hill. There was actually the castle and Dudley on one hill. And then Round Oak Steelworks to the left on another hill, like a big ocean liner. And over to the far right was Rowley Regis, where the bombs were going. They were blasting there. You'd hear those goes off like, oh, so bombs were dropping. And when I went to art college, I left art college. I went down to London to try and get work. You know, took my portfolio, college portfolio around. And then I came back, you know, because I needed some money. And when I came back, I got a job at Round Oak Steelworks. So Round Oak used to be the steelworks on top of that hill, Briary Hill, with a big red sky that opened every weekend. You know, when they let the furnaces off, it was all bright red, the whole sky. Goodness knows what we were breathing in, but it was very impressive. And I needed a job at the end because I needed to raise some money to go down to London. And I got a job at Round Oak Steelworks, which was changing the cranes on the overhead cranes, changing the chains on the overhead cranes in the main blast furnace, whatever it's called, you know, the main block. Filthy as anything, all the big heavy chains that you know, worked those overhead cranes. Obviously, there was a team of men, you know, so it's very heavy to keep on messing about with those chains. And I changed for a few weeks while the steelwork was closed. I changed, helped in a minor way, the changing of those chains in the Round Oak Steelworks. So Round Oak was very much part of my life, which most of my photography is tangentially or in an acute way, whatever, a depiction of my life, my early life. Your childhood leaves a tremendous impression upon you, which you just doesn't go away. It helps you so much. And being a photographer, my early childhood really helped me tremendously. My childhood in Black Country, and I've capitalized on it, I have to admit. So when it came to Some Great Reward, which what is it, the fourth album, whatever, of Depeche Mode? Well, so is it a Broken Frame, Construction Time Again, Some Great Reward? Yeah, I think it's the third album. They wanted a factory. I mean, they thought of the idea that we want a factory. This is the band, with Daniel Miller, who was their great producer and looked after the band in totally. He's the record company owner. And I had a meeting down in London. They went to the factory. And a couple, you know, like a married couple, just married, in love, whatever. And so I thought of
Round Oak
straight away. So then I hired a crew from London, that is, of lighting engineers, with 10 kilowatt and 5 kilowatt lamps, and lit the end of the shed of the factory. And then that formed the album cover. And it's, as I told you earlier, I sold posters of it, and we've got, I don't know if you want to mention it.
Yeah, I do. Where can people buy your print, that original print?
You can get it on VaughnGeorge.com, Vaughn, VauGhn, George, one word, Vaughn, VauGhn, George, GORGE, VaughnGeorge.com.
And then at the top of there, there's a little link you can click on. It says Brian Griffin Images.
Yeah, Brian Griffin Images, which you click on, of course. For
and you're donating one of those to us today, which you're going to sign, and we're going to auction that off to help the baby bank, the Briley Hill Baby Bank, which is fantastic. You know, you'll help so many people with that, so we're grateful for that. And your books as well. I mean, obviously, I've seen them on eBay and all the places where you can get them online.
Selling them at a special price for today. Being invited up here to talk on this radio and to meet you and hear about the wonderful work you're doing. I bought my book is online. It's more expensive online because I have to go to the post office and post it because I'm the publisher.
Yeah.
I raised the money myself. I wrote the book myself.
Yeah.
In fact, I wrote The Black Kingdom, which is volume one. This is volume two. It's called Black Country Dada. You can go on my website and
it's Brian Griffin.
BrianGriffin.co.uk.
Yeah.
Brian Griffin, all one word, BrianGriffin.co.uk.
Fantastic. And there's just on there, on the menu, it says shop, and you can go in there and buy it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
My twins wanted me to ask you about the 1982, when you had the opportunity for, I presume for Lucasfilm, to photograph the entire cast of
Star
Return
Wars.
Of the Jedi Star Wars. Can you tell us, I don't want you to give away too many little funny stories from your book, because I'd like people to buy your book.
Thank you, Frank.
But if you could just tell us a little bit about that great experience to have had.
Yeah, it was quite something. I mean, you know, most photographers photograph on set or something like that. For some reason, George Lucas or whatever, his underlings, his near underlings or the producer or whatever, decided to build a studio just next door to the studio they were filming in, which was a studio that I could light and use to do the portraits, which was really nice, really private, very quiet. Actor comes in, you've got, you know, not very much time, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. But the problem is with it, is that it was in 1982 or something?
Yeah, it was.
Very long time ago, like, very long time ago.
I was 12.
40 years ago. And I wasn't very good at lighting, to be honest. I mean, well, I was like, it wasn't my best. You know, I grew to be better and better and better as my career went on. But they all came in, like Carrie Fisher, you know, Princess Leia, or what's his name now?
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford is came in, and Luke Skywalker came in. And I can tell you a funny story if you want to.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I went out in the car park. I used to smoke cigarettes then, which is a terrible habit, but I've given it up years ago. I'd roll my cigarette up in the car park, and I was speaking to Darth Vader and to little R2-D2. R2-D2 I'd met many years earlier at Photographic College in Billy Smart Circus. Kenny.
Yeah, Kenny Baker. Is it Kenny Baker? No.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I'd met him there, and he was treated so badly. I mean, behind the ring of a circus is not a very nice place to be.
Mm.
Really harsh and really rude in the, you know, the circus master or whatever they call him, and all the animals being prodded, and I mean, it's quite a horrible thing in those days, that is. And we were stood there together, the three of us, and Kenny started talking. He's quite a chap, really, little Kenny. And then Darth Vader was like, he's massive compared to him, like he's like, yeah, another Kenny on top.
The Green Cross Code man, wasn't it? I can't remember his name.
And, David somebody, wasn't it?
Yeah,
David.
That's right.
Can't remember his nickname.
And they showed me they had two Mercedes. Their Kenny was like treated horribly in Billy Smart's in 71, maybe, 70, 71.
Yeah.
In 82, he got a Mercedes. And parked next to his Mercedes was an exact Mercedes of Darth Vader's. Big, big Mercs, the top of the range.
Yeah.
And Kenny told me, he said, oh, I've got extended pedals, you know, in his car. He got like big pedals so he could reach, his little legs could reach the pedals, built in specially. And Darth Vader was so tall, I'm sure he had a bubble coming out the top, you know, one of those Perspex bubbles or so to fit his head in.
They probably cut the bits for Kenny's pedals off the Darth Vader's one.
Exactly. So, I mean, I always remember that in the car park. And, yeah, I mean, and George Lucas rejected all the stuff, really, so, which was a shame. I think he kept a couple back, but...
But at least you've got copyright on them still.
Oh, yeah. I've got them in... I sell those on the poster site as well. So if we want any pictures of Star Wars, Revenge of the Jedi, then it's on my site.
You were
signed as well, of course.
Yes. So that's just on the briangriffin.co.uk website?
No, that's on the Vaughan George.
Vaughan George, yeah.
And you go into images, whatever, Brian Griffin, you know.
VaughanGeorge.com. Click on the link at the top. Yeah. Or just type Brian Griffin into Google, you'll find him. So you were saying earlier about like some little humble moments, like finding Kate Bush sat on the curb outside. And a lot of people think of these great artists as, you know, they get the money, they get the entourage and they become something else. But can you tell us a little bit about some of the people you've met who are still like human beings at the end of the day?
Yeah, the most famous ones are really nice people. The up-and-coming ones are really... I don't know. I haven't enjoyed being with them. I don't know how... I mean, I'm a black country boy. I don't know how rude I've been to them or what I've said to them. But the one, you know, the C-class, don't they, or something they call them.
Yeah.
Not terribly nice, but the A class are really fabulous, all of them. Even the Prime Minister, I mean, I did a portrait, as you know, at number 10 of Maggie, set my lights up and everything. And, I mean, she was one of the most, at that time in the mid-80s, she was the most powerful woman in the world.
Yeah, that was just after the Falklands War and everything.
It was, you know, with Gorbachev, and which is funny to speak now with Putin, and also Reagan, you know. I mean, she was really... And she was lovely. I mean, I really enjoyed meeting her. All those really, really top people were just fabulous to be with. And you could get a good image out of it, really. And then the ones that were not B or C class, whatever you might call them, the normal people way down the line, say, like me and you and whatever, were really good people to get a good image from,
Yeah. Throws me back to another image of yours that I saw, which is, it's a colour image, but it's very black and white-ish. It's the Lady Chainmakers, which I think is our friend Natalie, you were saying earlier, from the Chainmakers Guild. And it's a beautiful, soft, black and whitish image. The colours are all dulled out. And then you've got the glow of the red chain at the end of the tongs that she's holding. And she's got the red hair as well. Beautiful image. And you're saying that's gone into... that was taken locally, was it?
Oh, yeah, in Cradley. Well, in Mushroom Green,
It was actually
It was taken in Mushroom Green. But wow. I'd worked in Luke's dad's factory prior to that.
Because Luke's dad makes the bits that fit onto battleships.
Solid swivel. I think, in Cradley.
Yeah, and his artist studio is at the back of there, which is great to see a big industrial place that is also an art creative place. So that image you're saying has gone into a historical exhibition now in France?
No, in Italy.
In
Bologna, in Italy. There's an exhibition on at the moment in Bologna. In Bologna, there's the biggest... photography history museum in the world. This billionaireess, I should rather say, which I know quite well. She's a very nice lady, although she made all her money from packaging. I won't tell you what she packaged. Female medical things and stuff like that.
Okay.
And,
so everyone uses it and she's made a fortune out of it.
She made a fortune out of
Good
it.
For
and,
her.
And cigarettes as well, unfortunately. And she invested in this big art centre. It's a big, big place. And at the moment, there's an exhibition of the history of industrial photography. This is a very world-class exhibition that Natalie is actually in. It was quite a big print, Natalie. I remember it's a digital print. Are we going to talk about that?
Yeah.
It's a digital print of about, I would think it's about 5 feet tall of Natalie. an amazing print. So I know my printer.
So it's almost life size. She's quite tall.
Nat, oh yeah, but, almost you know, life almost, size.
About a foot off what she is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's a very impressive picture. They have about, in this show, they have three of my images, of which one is from my book, The Black Kingdom, which is Natalie, because I came out to the Black Country to produce a book on my early life. My mother, unfortunately, had passed away 4 years earlier. And I was sponsored by a French, a Parisian ecclesiastical college, actually, to do a project on the Black Country. I did that, and I reproduced like the woman I came around to get the rent off my mum and dad down in Stocking Street, the landlady who stank a snuff. We have Natalie as the chainmaker. We have Luke in the photograph as well, with three of his fellow chainmakers.
That's Luke Perry.
We have all sorts of aspects of the Black Country that were important to me that I remember so well. And so those are all modern photographs taken around about, well, sort of modern, 2011, 2010, 2011, 2010 really more so. And then it went on to China with Natalie and Luke in the photo like that. And they didn't call it the Black Country. The Chinese called it the Black Kingdom. And I adopted that word to give it the title of this book called The Black Kingdom, my first.
So that's like their translation of the Black Country.
Exactly, yeah. The Black Kingdom. Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah, I kind of like that. Adopt that as a secondary.
It's a bit more regal, isn't it?
Yeah,
a bit more regal. Exactly.
Maybe as we do the place up a bit, we should. We could never change the Black.
And then it came the exhibition. I just want to add. Exhibition then came to Warsaw Art College. Art Gallery. Excuse me. Yeah, it was a really fabulous art gallery up there. I think.
Yeah.
In the main gallery there, because it was quite a big show. Then I photographed my mother, and I couldn't photograph my mother because she passed away, of course, 4 years earlier. And I got a... I'll just ramble on a little bit.
Yeah, carry on. It's loads of time.
I couldn't photograph my mother, so therefore I had to find someone that looked like my mother when she gave birth to me, which was in 1948, I'm a very young mom, and I got a film casting agent, whatever, casting person, to try and find my mom. I gave her a photograph of my mom at the age when she gave birth to me, and she searched everywhere for someone, and she found someone in Leamington Spa, an actress in Leamington Spa, and she formed my mother. And what happened in the show, I mean, the whole of this exhibition, by the way, is in the Birmingham Library. It's housed in Birmingham Library, the new library, down in the archive. And it was a laboratory, the top laboratory in London, digital laboratory, because I know you want to talk about that. I had a big printer, a really massive printer, you know, imported and put in their building, which was put in by a crane. They wanted to promote it. So I got a phone call from them, and I printed this photograph of my mom, and it's massive. It's something, I don't know, so big. It's like 10 foot by, I don't know, 6 foot or something. And we're going to talk about all that sort of aspects of digital photography.
If we have time, but I mean, just go on. That's fine. I don't mind.
So that hangs there, and it's really big. It takes about four men to put it into place. It's such a big frame and big print, immaculate print. It's exquisite.
And this could be seen in Birmingham. In
Birmingham, like, they couldn't bring it up. It's too big. Yeah. But it's in the Black Kingdom book, and it's also and it's also in Birmingham Archive, in the new library, which is in...
Which is another fantastic building.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, I was listening to the World Service a lot at the moment because of the Ukrainian thing, which is a great way of finding out what's going on in the world. But also there's little bits in between about global photography, global music, global dance. You know, it brings in all these cultures. And one of the guys on the other day was talking about the death of photography as, not the death of photography as a thing, but those little shops that you used to have on every high street where there'd be a photographer that would take your family portraits. And how when chemical photography sort of stopped and digital came in, I guess a lot of these people were like wary of it, and there's a big learning curve to go through to get into digital. And it disappeared a bit. And they're all coming back now. I've always seen these pictures of people's family shots being done again now digitally. But just tell us a little bit how that... We've got a few minutes left. We've got like 8 minutes left. How did that affect... 6 minutes left. How did that affect you at the time of suddenly digital comes along? And, I mean, obviously you can afford to carry on using chemicals, but most of us didn't. How did it affect you?
It affected me quite big. I had to adapt digital photography. I had to adapt to digital photography and adopt it, because everyone was saying, well, it's so cheap for us now, no need to go to the laboratory, no need to process it, you know, no need to produce contact sheets. You know, you can just off a file, you know. So obviously clients and everything wanted it digitally done. And I accepted it, you know, I accepted it because I was a professional photographer. But I grew to really enjoy it. And I can't think of ever doing anything else but using digital photography now. I do use analog occasionally.
So rather than a stop and a start, for you it was an evolution.
And
more tools became available to you.
It became even more technical for me, because all my equipment, both my camera and all the lighting equipment, flash and everything like that, was broken up with basically, it was either broken up into 50% between, I don't know how to explain this, between each stop. So F11 to F8 was two stops, you know, like just divided by two. But whilst with digital photography, it's divided by 10, you know. So therefore, all my inspirations, all my love, my wishes to sort of get near painting with just fractions, just change fractions in tone between various elements of the image, I could obtain instead of going clog, click, or walking the lights in by feet, or walking them back by feet to change the quantity of light hitting something. I could like really make it really gently different. And I could light things far more beautiful than I could ever light as an analog photographer, as you might call it, in the digital age has been very impressive for me, you know, very important.
But when you used to do the wet photography, as I call it, did you used to do your own wet photography? Like
I did at college, and I did for about a year after leaving it. But I got so much work immediately.
But you started using laboratories.
I just would never have any sleep. It'd be impossible to process everything, print everything, dry everything, and then. But I couldn't, because I had so much work to do. Yeah. I was very lucky. I got a lot of work straight away.
But now everything's inside a laptop, I guess. And
Everything's inside a laptop, and it's a digital file that's
so it's a lot
sent by WeTransfer.
Carry it around. Now, we've got a little bit of time left. I wanted to talk briefly about the Music Commission, which is a thing that's happening in Briley Hill, thanks to the Heritage Action Zone and the Cultural Consortium and Historic England, mainly, who are funding all this. They're... we've won an EOI, I say won. I said before, it's a bit like dating. You sort of swipe left, swipe right. We send off an expression of interest. If they like it, they swipe one way. If they don't, they swipe the other. We were lucky. We were chosen, along with six other towns. I think there might be eight in total by the end of it. And they're going to come to Briley Hill, a group called Live Music Now, which was set up by a trust from Yehudi Menuhin, the violinist, I think. And what we had to ask locally as part of our expression of interest, who would be interested in helping with that? So we've got the music studio, the Resonance College, Sound Junkies, the local pubs and venues. But also I thought, while I'm at it, I've made friends with Brian, I'll ask him as well. And we're hoping that as part of that, we can collaborate with you. And some of these young, it's for people who are young, mainly, to work with this project and have, let's say, disabilities or are vulnerable in some way, they haven't got equipment available to them. So these people come in and give them all the equipment and guidance and training that they need. But I'm hoping possibly to set up a sort of Zoom meeting with you, say if you're coming all the way here. If you are in the area, great. But that you could work as part of that project and we can create something beautiful, maybe something local and beautiful for the cover of that work, if you're still happy to do that. But I don't want you to commit to it, but, you know, we'll talk to you about it in the future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that will go online and become part of SoundCloud as an album of all these different pieces produced around the country. And there'll be a video as well. So that'll be going out this year, and later in the year the videos will come out, and it'll be really nice to work on that with you. The next song, which we're going to play out with, is Gold by Iggy Pop. Did you get to meet Iggy Pop for the images that you did with him?
Oh, yeah, very much so, yes.
He seems like a real darling to me. Is he as Zimsy sounds in when he does the radio shows?
Well, it was an experience, let's put it that way. His experience. I mean, to give you an idea, I'll try and keep this a little bit abridged.
Yeah, we've got about a minute left.
Okay. I was taken down to London Bridge. The rehearsal studio was there. He had a couple of Sex Pistols in his band, I think. Glenn Matlock. And also the drummer. Oh, forgot the drummer of the Sex Pistols and Glenn Matlock, one of the guitarists.
Yeah.
And I went to see him. I was taken down there by the designer of the cover. And he said, because we have to call him James. You can't call him Iggy. You have to call him James, because that's his real name, as you know. And James, this is Brian, who's going to do the album cover. He walked over to me, faced me. He brought over with him a plastic flip-top bin. Put the flip-top bin between me and him, and then took out his penis and then urine
into the bin. Well, that's a great one to show on. Thanks, Brian.